Understanding the Market Crash and Our Sustainable Future. This is audio file 3 of 6. And we're at the top of page 9. Root Causes. The Root Causes Revealed. First, let's take a break from all this seriousness for a lighter Toto moment. Click on the image. And we have here an image showing Dorothy and the Tin Man and the Wizard, and there's a YouTube clip here that you can click on. It's kind of fun. It just runs 1 minute. The title is Pay No Attention to That Man Behind the Curtain. So you'll find that at the top of page 9, and you might want to go click on that one. And continuing with the reading here. Now, let's focus on a few of the most important root causes that once understood will lead into Plan S. We need to look behind the curtain, or under the hood, so to speak. Most of this is so new that almost no one has even heard of it. We are very lucky to be learning this. We are very lucky to be learning this as it's coming just in the nick of time. I myself was uninformed and busy hacking at the leaves of evil just until a few years ago. Here's a quick list of these most important root topics in the order I will be explaining them. Personal development, evolutionary psychology, neuroscience and the limbic system, energy and emergy, embodied energy, peak oil, and Jevons paradox. As we dive into this, you may feel a wide range of emotions. I know because I've already felt them myself, literally hundreds of times. On one hand, there is exhilaration finally understanding what is going on here. Some of it is really quite fascinating, like the inner workings of a fine Swiss watch. There is a real sense of power when root causes get illuminated and understood. On the other hand, you may feel sadness at the serious challenges we face, and at the extent to which humanity has innocently screwed up, all due to a dearth of information caused by no user's manuals. And we're arriving at the top of page 10 now. Most of all, though, this will be overwhelming. We are a very young species, and for all our masses of information, we are still quite uninformed in terms of how our world really works. Also, due to the complexity of some of the underlying concepts here, you might not understand everything right away. That's fine. I didn't either. We can all wish there was a nice leisurely 5 years, as I've taken, to soak this all up. But really, it really takes a while to settle in. Please affix your PMA, that's positive mental attitude cap, firmly to your head before diving in here. Take breaks, read, reread, and ask questions. Feel free to bypass all these preliminaries and under the hood stuff, and skip right on down to the solution section at the very end. And next section here, still on page 10, is entitled Personal Development Overview. Certainly our brains and how we use them must be an important root cause of humanity's problems. This seems so obvious to me, and yet very few people realize it. Think of it this way. If we all had brains like other animals, we wouldn't have most of these crazy problems, would we? This realization has caused me to focus my research intently on the human mind, and I use brain and mind as synonyms here. I figure if we can understand how our brain works and how to use it correctly, maybe we can stop creating so many problems and even solve a few. Personal development is one of three brain-mind disciplines. The other two are evolutionary psychology and neuroscience, which I'll discuss below. Information on how our brains work has really exploded in the last few decades. This is all cutting-edge stuff, folks. This is where we must start, since without personal development, we would really be sunk. All the other root causes, when studied in depth, lead to one inevitable conclusion. We're screwed, and there is no way out. I should know, since I've been studying the collapse literature for 5 years. In fact, if it weren't for personal development, I wouldn't be writing this right now. Lately, I've been feeling a lot like a fellow named Wallace Hartley. He was the violinist that led the band on the deck of the Titanic as it sank. In fact, about 14 years ago, I was playing my violin on the stages of Holland America cruise ships. Fortunately, none of them sank, and I'm still here so I can write this. Anyway, I'm not doing as much entertaining these days, as I think working on Plan S is a little higher priority. But if not for personal development, I would just keep on fiddling as Rome burned. I would simply return to the stage of a sinking ship and await the inevitable. For those unfamiliar with personal development, you probably just know it by one of its many other names, like personal growth, self-help, self-actualization, success, sales training, motivational speaking, positive thinking, etc. There's even a whole megabucks industry called the personal development industry. The most popular celebrity personal development motivator is Tony Robbins, who is often seen on late-night infomercials, and good old Zig Ziglar is not far behind him. Now, if you're sitting there shaking your head and thinking that I've lost mine, I'm not surprised. Indeed, many of these motivational speakers project a con man sort of personality, and unfortunately, the industry has had at least one scandal that I know of. It has especially taken a hit since The Secret came out recently. And that's referring to The Secret DVD, and there's a link there at the bottom of page 10 where you can click off to their site. You may also wonder what in the hell this has to do with sustainability. Don't worry, I'm okay and I'll explain. And now we've arrived at the top of page 11. Quotation. Whatever the mind of man can conceive and believe, it can achieve. Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich. The personal development industry has been around in its modern form for about 100 years, and Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich, is the industry Bible to this day. Another cornerstone is Maxwell Maltz's book, Psycho-Cybernetics, copyright 1960. Many of the core themes of personal development are integral parts of Plan S, such as the power of our thoughts, goals, making detailed plans, and taking action. Sound familiar? This industry has been plagued by many of the same problems that all modern industries have. This is unfortunate since it makes a mockery of the important core teachings of personal development. And these core teachings are essential to both individual success and species success. So I urge you to separate these important teachings of personal development from a few unscrupulous operators. We needn't throw out the baby with the bathwater here. Since we are uninformed regarding how our minds work, no user's manuals, we have been unintentionally and naively programming them for failure, i.e. collapse, rather than success, i.e. sustainability. Everything that personal development or the success industry teaches can be applied not only to individual success, but also to species success. And now on to the land of possibilities. And we've arrived at the next section, which is in the middle of page 11. This one is entitled Personal Development, Possible versus Impossible. Earlier I wrote, quote, "And there is one thing I have to share that no one seems to be aware of, at least I haven't found anyone yet," unquote. Well, here it is. Napoleon Hill tells us, whatever the mind of man can conceive and believe, it can achieve. Tony Robbins wrote a book entitled Unlimited Power. Are these personal development authors telling us that anything is possible and nothing is impossible? Sure sounds like it, eh? Virtually every motivational speaker will tell you that you can be anything you want to be if you set your goals and take action, that there really are no limits. I've explained that based on all my years of research, that the future looked pretty bleak for humanity. There's an abundance of doomy, gloomy messages littering the landscape, and we've all run across many of them. I mean, the logical conclusion one comes to after intense, in-depth study is that there's no way out of a serious collapse and die-off of 90% of the population and a hot planet left in ruins. The problem with these messengers is that they miss the incredible power innate in the human mind. Our minds are incredibly powerful. Over the millennia, human minds have solved thousands of problems once thought to be completely impossible. I mean, heck, we've even landed on the moon and built a space station. So I've incorporated this logic into Plan S. We may have huge challenges as a species, but if we set goals and take action, we can solve them. After all, anything is possible, right? Well, a funny thing happened a couple years ago. I started talking about things that were totally impossible to my friend Rusty. Rusty stopped me and reminded me that I'd previously told him that anything was possible. Well, at that moment I realized I had a serious conflict. Certainly some things are possible and others are not, but how can we tell the difference? After thinking about it for a while, I came to the realization that it all has to do with the natural laws of our universe. By this I mean laws like the law of gravity, or 1 plus 1 equals 2. What I concluded is that things are possible as long as they don't violate natural laws. Conversely, things are impossible if they do violate natural laws. This second one is what the personal development folks frequently omit or gloss over, since it doesn't help sell their products. I just arrived at the top of page 12 here. Now let's look at some examples that apply to our present situation. Bear in mind that these will be greatly simplified, and I'm not going to provide supporting links at this time. Example 1. Prediction. We're doomed. There's no way around a total collapse and die-off of 90% of the population. Civilizations always exhaust their resource base and collapse, and history proves this time and time again. Response. Certainly the outlook appears bleak, especially if we look at the historical record. However, there is no known natural law that prohibits us from learning how to live sustainably within our means. This isn't to say it's going to be easy. It just means it is possible. Example 2. Prediction. If we would just stop fighting these stupid oil wars and develop renewable energy sources like solar, wind, and hydrogen, there would be plenty of energy for everyone. There is enough solar energy falling on our planet daily to run it for a year. Response. These kinds of statements may be true in theory. However, after applying known energy laws, humanity is going to have to acknowledge that there are real limits to how many people the Earth can support. This is known as carrying capacity. We know that the Earth's carrying capacity is at least 500 million people, but it may not be much more than that. So in order to live on renewables, we need to reduce our population from 6.7 billion to around 500 million. This represents a 92% reduction. It is simply impossible for the Earth to support our present 6.7 billion, much less 10 to 15 billion people on renewable energy sources. I will explain more about this in the energy section below. My point here is that we really need to be careful when using the words possible and impossible. These are tricky words, and as we learn to think in a new way, we must use them both wisely and intentionally. Personal development teaches us that the words and thoughts we speak, hear, and allow to enter our minds programs them. Therefore, it is very important that we choose them carefully. Finally, our species hasn't been obeying the natural laws of the universe for a number of reasons. The most obvious reason is because we've been uninformed. The other major reason is explained by evolutionary psychology, which I'll get to below. Regardless of the reasons, when we violate natural laws, we end up facing the consequences. Or, I can put it another way. When we try to do the impossible, eventually there will be hell to pay. The universe cuts us no slack just because we were uninformed. Actions do have consequences. Once we learn these natural laws and start living by them, we will be well on our way to living sustainably. And now we're at the next section. Looks like we're down near the bottom of page 12. Impossible list. As a realist, I'm acknowledging big challenges and also that which is positive and hopeful. Now I get to show you why personal development and what is possible and impossible are so important to our species. Personal development teaches over and over that what we put into our minds creates our reality. Thoughts create. We tend to become what we think about. Does any of that sound familiar? We know these things, but easily forget and allow thoughts into our minds that hold us back and cause defeat and failure in our lives. This happens at both the personal level and also at the species level. We need look only at the thoughts blaring from our TV screens and newspaper headlines this past week to see this very destructive dynamic at work. Quotation. People who say it cannot be done should not interrupt those who are busy doing it. Chinese proverb. Here is a list of so-called impossibles that were made possible through the power of thought of people who believed and never gave up. These are all examples of people who proved that anything is possible as long as it doesn't violate the natural laws of the universe. As you read this list, think about how these people use their minds. This is what our species must do as we transition to a new way of thinking. If you're unfamiliar with any of these, Google and Wikipedia will be glad to assist you. So here's the impossible list. This is a list about 12 out of many, many more that are available. The Wright brothers first controlled flight at Kitty Hawk. John Harrison solved the longitude problem. Ernest Shackleton saved all 28 shipwrecked crew members. Apollo 11 moon landing. John Kennedy, by the end of the decade. Apollo 13, safe return. Gene Kranz said, failure is not an option. Sir Edmund Hillary and Tenzing Norgay, Mount Everest first summit. Reinhold Messner, Mount Everest, first summit without supplemental oxygen. Roger Bannister, first under 4 minute mile. Chuck Yeager, broke the sound barrier. Thomas Edison, thousands of experiments led to the electric light bulb. Mohandas Gandhi, India's nonviolent independence. The Aztec Empire, an empire built from a swamp. Barack Obama, the first black candidate for president of the United States. In 1895, one of the world's greatest scientists, Lord Kelvin, stated, quote, heavier-than-air flying machines are impossible, unquote. What if the Wright brothers had allowed this great scientist's thoughts to affect their plan to do what the world believed to be impossible? Just 8 years later, the brothers flew at Kitty Hawk. Sir Isaac Newton, one of the world's most famous scientists of any era, and other prominent scientists doubted that a clock could be used to navigate longitude at sea. What if John Harrison had allowed these doubts to affect his work? In 1761, Harrison's H4 clock came within 1 nautical mile of accuracy. There are some links in a video clip about this below in the section, Impossible, you say? Check out John Harrison. And now we're at the bottom of page 13 and ready for the next section. This one is entitled, So Why This Big Deal Over Personal Development and Impossible, Henry? We are surrounded by messages of doom, gloom, collapse, crashes, and on. We have been failing as a species, taking 10 steps forward and 100 steps backward. We can look back over dozens of failed civilizations throughout history. The outlook for many people is bleak. I am providing Plan S as an alternative to this doom. It is a plan to put our species on a sustainable course, and I need help working this plan. I cannot do it alone. It is not going to be easy. It has truly looked impossible on many occasions, and I have thought of giving up on Plan S, which in effect would be giving up on humanity, which includes all of you. I think, but I am a member of this species and I have all these friends that I love and care about. I cannot give up on us. And here we've arrived at the top of page 14. So I pick myself up and keep going, keep working on this plan. And one of the ways I get strength to continue is remembering all of these great people who refuse to give up while facing impossible odds. I also find strength when I think of all of you. There is not time to go into all the details. I will present a few more root causes, and then we'll send this thing off into cyberspace. As you read on, you will be confronted with information that may lead you into the land of impossible. As you learn the details of Plan S, you will be faced with the impossibility of it all, time and time again. I'm intentionally spending a lot of time here on personal development, because it's only our minds that can keep us on track here and move us into an era of sustainability. You can use this impossible list too. There is no law of nature that prohibits our species from living sustainably. Let me state that again. There is no law of nature that prohibits our species from living sustainably. The only thing that can defeat us is our collective minds. Please keep close tabs on your mind in the coming weeks and months. Remember how the Wright brothers, Edmund Hillary, Tenzing Norgay, Mohandas Gandhi, Roger Bannister, and Ernest Shackleton used their minds to overcome extreme adversity. If you allow a belief in impossibility to take over your mind, you will surely add one more vote to making impossible a reality. And if you hold a belief of possibility, you will add one more vote to making possible a reality. And the next section here on page 12 is entitled Evolutionary Psychology and Neuroscience, the Limbic System. I've explained that we need to find the root causes of our problems and stop trying to fix symptoms, which just bounce back. I've explained that the primary root cause of our problems is our brains, and I've identified three brain-mind disciplines. The first of those three is personal development. The other two are evolutionary psychology and neuroscience. I've lumped them together here since I want to get through this, and I know you do too. After 5 years of study, I am 100% convinced that we now have enough information from these three to create a comprehensive user's manual for our brains. We can then start operating our brains to support a sustainable future and to think in a new way, as advised by Albert Einstein. Evolutionary psychology is the newest brain-mind discipline. It explains that our innate human nature is largely governed by instinct and is under genetic control. This is best described in Timothy Miller's book, How to Want What You Have, Chapter 3, Human Nature. Amazon and your library have copies. I also have a 48-minute MP3 available that you can request by email. And there's a link at the bottom of page 14 on that. The term evolutionary psychology was only popularized in 1992, so it's only been around for 16 years and is therefore largely unknown. This is where we learn about our DNA and natural selection, and specifically how gradual changes over millions of years have formed what we call human nature. Most of what we do to destroy our environment, overpopulate our planet, use up our non-renewable resources, and hundreds of other bad things, is done unconsciously. We can blame it all on our human nature. Evolutionary psychology explains the genetic basis for dozens of our behaviors like greed, war, and altruism, to name just a few. We're at the top of page 15 now. Evolutionary psychology is both new and controversial. Many of its tenets are hotly debated. My personal opinion is that it provides essential insights into why our brains have caused hundreds of contemporary problems. These insights are used continually in Plan S to both understand our problems and to point the way to solutions. Evolutionary psychology can easily be used to promote the belief that our civilization is genetically pre-programmed to collapse. It is the basis of the famous book by Richard Dawkins, The Selfish Gene, and it underlies some of Jay Hansen's peak oil website, www.dieoff.org. I am well aware of these negative spins based on evolutionary psychology. Evolutionary psychology can also be used to understand our genetic tendencies so that we can take steps to counteract the most damaging ones. This is how Plan S uses evolutionary psychology. It all has to do with understanding how our brains work so that we can use them to our best advantage. This is a classic situation where the attitude of the observer is everything. You can see the cup half empty, or you can see it half full. It's your choice. Actually, it's not in the text, but this is probably a classic situation where what you learn in What the Bleep is applicable. Okay, back to the reading. Let's move on to neuroscience and our limbic systems. The modern study of the brain from a medical and scientific perspective is about 100 years old. While most of neuroscience doesn't have any bearing on Plan S, there is one very specific structure in our brains called the limbic system. It includes substructures called the amygdala, hippocampus, and hypothalamus. The limbic system in general and the amygdala in specific are known as an important factor in our emotions, and some authors even go a step farther and allude to our spirituality. I've seen many references to the limbic system in relation to emotions. At least one prominent neuroscientist, Dr. Ron Joseph, and there's a link on this page to his website, has gone a step further and suggested that humans are hardwired for God. And there's also a link where you can go read his article about that here on page 15. According to this article, he believes that there is a neurological, even genetic explanation for religious belief and spiritual experience. If this is new to you or seems like a stretch, try this Google search. And there's a link you can click on there. If you're one of my humanist, atheist, or pagan friends, I understand and respect your beliefs. Before I lose you on this one, let me speak a little about religion and spirituality, and then I'll have some comments directed specifically to you. Plan S recognizes the important contributions of both science and religion. These two approaches to knowledge are essential to our sustainable future. Unfortunately, these two have been at each other's throats for centuries. Recently, however, this gap is being bridged more and more. Scientists in both evolutionary psychology and neuroscience are explaining and confirming the connection. The Clergy Letter Project, which is linked to here on page 15, is building the bridge from the theological perspective. Over the past 200 years, the happiness pendulum has made a wide swing away from the spiritual plane and into the material plane. In the process, most of us have become used to and even addicted to our material comforts, our stuff. I'm sure most of you agree that our deepest happiness and fulfillment doesn't emanate from our stuff, but from each other, and our relationships with our pets, other creatures, and the natural environment. We learn from people who travel to the third world and developing countries that once basic needs are met, these people are just as happy, if not happier, than we are. They simply fill their lives with more spiritual experiences than material ones. This is yet another aspect of thinking in a new way. That happiness pendulum is starting to swing back to the spiritual plane. In Plan S, we welcome this return. We understand the importance of both science and religion and realize that we need it all as we build our sustainable future. Now, as promised, here are my comments to my humanist, atheist, and pagan friends. You all come equipped with limbic systems and amygdalas just like the rest of us. You experience emotions and the wonders of the natural world just like the rest of us. The paths and beliefs that you have chosen away from traditional beliefs in a higher power are your right, and they don't conflict with anything Plan S advocates. In your case, you may find happiness in your personal relationships, in a sunset, or a hike in the forest. Or perhaps you may find happiness in rituals with like-minded friends, or in dance, or in music. There are thousands of ways we can all find rich experiences outside of the material plane. As individuals, regardless of whether we believe in traditional gods, non-traditional gods, or no gods at all, evolutionary psychology and neuroscience can help us to understand how we arrived here as we did. They can help us understand the transition we must make to finding happiness and fulfillment outside of our worlds filled with material stuff. And here we are. Oh, that was that last few sentences was at the top of page 16. So here we are on page 16 already. And the next section is entitled Energy and Emergy, Embodied Energy. And just since you can't see it, the word emergy is spelled with an M. It's E-M-E-R-G-Y. And emergy is actually a contraction of the two words, embodied energy. Well, believe it or not, that's all I'm going to say about our brains. We're done with that. We're now on to the next root cause of our problems. This is also going to be essential to understand before I can explain what's happening with the meltdown of the world's financial markets these past few weeks. We've all grown up in an era of cheap and abundant energy, provided courtesy of plentiful supplies of fossil fuels and uranium. These supplies have made modern industrial civilization possible. We've grown up taking massive quantities of energy for granted. We've also taken for granted that these supplies would continue to increase forever. As most of you know, this short era is coming to an end. It has lasted a couple hundred years. We've lived our entire lives during this era, and we know nothing else. Because we've taken it for granted, most of us have forgotten whatever we might have learned about the laws of energy back in high school physics class. We just flip the switch or pull up to the pump, and away we go. There's still plenty of energy around, but it's no longer as cheap and abundant as it has been for the last century. When energy was cheap, we were able to be wasteful of it since it didn't seem to matter. Now that the stuff is getting more expensive, we are starting to think in terms of conservation, curtailment, efficiency, and renewables. In fact, here in the USA, with gasoline hovering around $3 a gallon, we've actually started to reduce our use of petroleum recently. But worldwide demand has remained high up until the last few weeks when everything started to crash. The high demand was coming from Asia. In the USA, we complain about high gas prices, although prices here are still relatively cheap. Here are a couple of links that will help you understand how cheap gas still is in the United States. And there's two links at this point towards the bottom of page 16. One is called Cruel Fuel World, and the other is called Average Gasoline Prices Around the World. As you can see, the price ranges from 11 cents a gallon in Venezuela to $18.40 a gallon in Sierra Leone. Next, I will introduce you to the concept of emergy, which is a difficult one, but quite essential if we are ever going to live sustainably. I know it looks like a typo, but it really is spelled with an M, not an N. Emergy is a term most often associated with the late Howard T. Odum of the University of Florida. There are links on both emergy and Howard Odum in that sentence, also at the bottom of page 16. Emergy is a contraction of embodied energy. This is a very new concept and is virtually unknown, although many of us working on sustainability have heard about it. The best concise explanation I've found comes from this article at John Michael Greer's The Archdruid Report. And there's a link to the full article at the bottom of page 16. To understand how this works, it is necessary to detour a bit to H.T. Odum's useful concept of emergy or embodied energy. Very roughly, emergy is the total amount of energy needed to produce a good or provide a service, including all the energy and material feeds that went into making the good or service available. A coffee cup sitting next to your computer, for example, embodies the energy needed to mine and process the clay, provide raw materials for the glaze and compound them, fire the kiln, and ship both the raw materials to the factory and the finished product to you. That amount of energy is the energy cost of the cup. I mean, without that much energy being used, you can't have that cup, or at least you can't get it in that way. And now we're at the top of page 17. Earlier, I gave an example about all the solar energy falling on the Earth and how it is impossible to support 6.7 billion humans on this energy budget, contrary to popular belief. The reason has to do with what Odom calls energy transformity. When the sun shines, we get highly dispersed energy. You can't pour sunlight into your gas tank or hook it up to your power meter. Unlike fossil fuels, it must first be compressed and changed into a usable form. To help you understand how much compression is actually necessary, think of the photosynthesis process that plants use to grow. Then click on this link, and there's a link right there towards the top of page 17 you can click on. As you can see, there is wide agreement that it takes around 98 tons of ancient plant matter to make a single gallon of gasoline. This is a great example of what energy transformity means. This explains in part why the Earth has a limited carrying capacity. Back in 1650, before humanity started using fossil fuels and uranium, the Earth's population was about 500 million. So the Earth has proven to us that its carrying capacity with no fossil fuels or uranium is at least that number. To start to understand energy, or embodied energy, you can start looking at the more complex material objects in your life. A computer, a car, or a washing machine, for instance. Think about all the different kinds of parts and materials in that object. Now take it a step further and think about where these materials came from on our planet. They had to be mined or harvested by some combination of humans and machinery. They had to be packaged and shipped. Think about the shipping by container, ship, and truck. There were probably several factories along the way. These factories all had to be built and staffed by workers. They must be climate controlled and maintained. Then the finished product had to be packaged and shipped to a warehouse, and from there to a retailer or distributor. But we're not done yet. In order for you to own this material object, roads and often airports and aircraft had to be built and maintained. A variety of security screens may have been done along the way, especially at container ports. Is there anything else I've forgotten? Yes. What happens to this object when you no longer want it, because it becomes obsolete? It must now go to a recycling center or salvage yard, where more energy is used to take it apart or crush it and melt it down to be reused in the world's industrial economy. You might also try this with something simple, like a cheese sandwich or a chair. This is a new way of thinking, folks. During our cheap energy days, this kind of thinking wasn't required. What you just read is called an energy analysis. This analysis follows goods and services from cradle to grave, or hopefully the next cradle. We start learning about our real energy footprint. This footprint must be drastically reduced for humanity to live sustainably. And while we're thinking in this new way, it is important to remember that while we are reducing our sense of fulfillment from material sources, we are increasing fulfillment from spiritual sources. Howard Odom and his wife Elizabeth wrote a book in 2001, A Prosperous Way Down. And I have a link here at the bottom of page 17 to that book at Amazon.com. It contains extensive information about energy and transformity. This is one of the most important books I've read. There are many copies in libraries. I read every word of this book since every page is chock full of important information. If you are looking for hope, this is a great one. The crucial thing to remember is that it must be followed by action. And we've now arrived at the top of page 18. Next section is called peak oil. You will recall I explained this paper is going to a diverse group. I'm sure that many of you are already years into an understanding of peak oil, and I have a link there. In that case, just skip this section. For those of you who are not, peak oil is yet another root cause of our problems. It is deeply intertwined with and underlies our energy and financial problems. Since peak oil is widely perceived as the boogeyman under the bed, it is often not even mentioned. I guess some people think that if we ignore a problem, it will just quietly go away. Others may not mention it because it's politically risky. Two recent documentaries on climate change, An Inconvenient Truth and The 11th Hour, which I have links to both of their websites there, we're on page 18, were completely silent on peak oil. Peak oil is a much greater immediate threat to industrial civilization than climate change. I'm not trying to belittle climate change. They're both very important issues. Peak oil will have abrupt and greater effects in the near term, the next century, and climate change's effects will be felt much more gradually, perhaps over several millennia. There are many definitions for peak oil. Most people mistakenly think that it means we're running out of oil or that demand for oil has exceeded supply. These are gross errors and oversimplifications. They lead people into the lands of doom and denial. We often hear of the peak oil theory as if it's this dark stain on humanity that hasn't yet been proven or isn't really happening. You deserve a better analysis that takes the fear out of peak oil and replaces it with understanding, planning, and action. This is a core component of Plan S. Here goes. Wikipedia's peak oil article states, and there's a link there on page 18 to that article, peak oil is the point in time when the maximum rate of global petroleum extraction is reached, after which the rate of production enters terminal decline. I can't argue with this definition, and it's typical. However, it doesn't explain why. So here is my definition. Quote, peak oil is the point at which the Earth is unable to produce oil at a higher rate, regardless of demand. Unquote. We got there in February of 2006 at about 85 billion barrels per day. So it appears that we have already passed the world peak. I realize this is all a far-fetched abstraction for many of you. So let's take an example from daily life that everyone can easily understand. We've all dropped a can of soda pop or beer, and then pulled the tab without waiting long enough for the pressure inside to subside. At first, the pressure in the can is high, and we get a gusher. The same thing happens at an oil well. Pop the lid, and the oil comes gushing out. But soon, the pressure subsides, and the bubbles are all foaming around the top of the can. Next, we're sipping the liquid off the top of the can as pressure decreases even more, and we can safely do so without getting drenched. Then, for a period of about an hour or so, the bubbles remain inside the can, and we can enjoy the carbonation. Finally, if we don't drink up right away, our beverage goes flat, and we lose interest. The key concept here is pressure. Pressure in oil production is the key factor. Oil is under pressure in the earth. While not exactly the same, it works similarly to the carbonated beverage example. Pressure declines over time. Once the carbonation in our beverage starts to decline, we cannot coax it to increase by wishful thinking. The same is true for oil. We are not running out of oil, folks. Huge amounts of oil will be in the earth long after we are gone. But the pressure will get so low, and we will have depleted the supplies near the earth's surface to the point that it is no longer possible to bring the oil up out of the ground. This is because it would take more energy to extract a barrel of oil than the energy contained in that barrel. This is one of those impossible situations dictated by the laws of nature. And We've just arrived at the top of page 19 here, and we've got two charts on this page, so you might want to take a look at this one. Since a picture is worth a thousand words, here are a couple of graphs that will make this clearer. Looks like we peaked in 2006 at 84.678 million barrels per day, and we've been on a level plateau ever since. And then we have a chart showing that. It's entitled Peak Oil Production of 2006 Has Not Been Exceeded. We often hear from people who think that we will just discover more or go drill offshore or in Siberia. And indeed, new discoveries are being made, new technologies are coming online, and we are drilling in deep seas and exotic frozen wastelands. But look at this next chart. Our production passed discoveries way back in 1980. Stare at this chart for a while and think about its implications. You will see it again a couple of times below. And this next chart is entitled Real Discovery Trend. So that was page 19. Now we've arrived at the top of page 20. Now let's go back to our carbonated beverage, which is now sitting on the bar, half empty. The pressure in that can is constantly dropping. No amount of prayer or wishful thinking is going to cause it to increase and start fizzing up again. We recognize this as a fact, not a theory. Dropping pressure is simply the laws of nature at work. The same is true for our world oil supplies. What you see above are the facts, my friends, not some wild theory yet to be proven. The consensus among geologists and scientists is that the Earth will never be able to produce oil at a faster rate due to dropping wellhead pressures. For more information, here are the two pages I pulled those charts from. And then we've got actually three links here on page 20. One is Peak Oil, Are We There Yet? The next one is Peak Oil, Oil Production Chart. And then I've got one here in this next sentence. Here is what T. Boone Pickens has to say about peak oil. World oil production peaked in 2005. Despite growing demand and an unprecedented increase in prices, oil production has fallen over the last 3 years. Oil is getting more expensive to produce, harder to find, and there just isn't enough of it to keep up with demand. The simple truth is that cheap and easy oil is gone. For more, just Google or go to Wikipedia. This is not the end of the world, but it is the end of an era. I am doing my part to create a paradigm shift to a new way of thinking and a new way of living. We need to understand our root problems in order to respond with intelligent plans and actions. Understanding peak oil is essential to understanding what is going on in the financial markets, which is explained below. Information replaces fear. And now we're here in the middle of page 20, and the next section is entitled Jevons Paradox. You're probably feeling a little overwhelmed at this point. Me too. So let's break for commercial. This one is from my friend The Stimulator and runs 8 minutes. You can watch the whole thing just for fun or focus in on Anita Burke's comments about Russell Means, which relates to my message here. Her little spiel takes about 45 seconds, starting at 6 minutes and 30 seconds. Just slide the round buckle over to about 6 minutes and let it play from there. If you match the position of the buckle in this image, you'll be in the right spot. And right there at the bottom of page 20 is a picture of Anita Burke, and the title of the episode is It's the End of the World, Episode 2. So you'll have to go to your computer and open this one up if you want to hear what Anita has to say. Actually, Anita is really great here. Now we've arrived at the top of page 21. While we're on commercial break, you can catch all her comments starting at 4 minutes and 33 seconds. Just slide the buckle over to the left and have a listen. I'll tie this in with Jevons Paradox shortly. Up in the section entitled Energy and Emergy, I wrote, "Now that the stuff is getting more expensive, we are starting to think in terms of conservation, curtailment, efficiency, and renewables." Now I will expand on that. Back in 1995, I felt really guilty about my own wildly extravagant energy use. I had just taken 5 months and flown around the world, blowing countless barrels of jet fuel in the process. So I launched a program of curtailment and cut my own energy use to the bone. This phase lasted about 8 years. Then, sometime around 2003, I had one of those eureka moments. You know, one of those moments where a little light bulb turns on in your head. What I realized was that whatever tiny amount of energy I saved by my conservation was now available for someone else somewhere in the world to burn up and waste. Since I'd been around the world and all over the United States, I was well aware that under 1% of the world's population, governments and corporations were engaged in any kind of conservation at all. So it dawned on me that whatever 1% of us saved was simply getting blown by the other 99%. And this led me to realize that all the other green, conscious, conserving environmentalists like me weren't really helping to save the world at all. All we were doing was saving money in our personal lives and practicing for the day when we all will be forced to conserve, whether we like it or not. I soon found out that this phenomenon had a name, Jevons Paradox, and that it was first observed almost 150 years ago in England. According to the Wikipedia article, and we've got a link there to that article, quote, "In economics, the Jevons Paradox, sometimes called the Jevons Effect, is the proposition that technological progress and increases the efficiency with which a resource is used tends to increase rather than decrease the rate of consumption of that resource. Eventually, I came to realize that me and all my green conserving friends and the entire environmental movement, while well-intentioned and acting in good faith, might be doing more harm than good. Certainly, we were not being effective on a worldwide scale. I realized that this was one of many reasons that we are taking 10 steps forward and 100 steps back. I felt a deep sense of sadness to see how uninformed we are and how our lack of information causes our best efforts to fail. This spurred me on to create Plan S, which is intentionally designed to defeat Jevons Paradox. It also caused me to do a 180-degree shift in my own attitudes towards conservation. I shifted from focusing on conservation to creating Plan S, a new way of thinking and a worldwide paradigm shift. What I am explaining is almost unknown in the green movement. There is a tremendous amount of resistance to facing Jevons Paradox for a variety of reasons. But I am by no means the only one who is talking about it. Certainly Anita Burke and Russell Means, in the YouTube clip above, understand that individual conservation is ineffectual. Other peak oil observers such as Matt Savinar, Rand Prier, Carolyn Baker, Pat Murphy, and Dmitry Orlov have also commented on this phenomenon in one way or another. And for the five names that I just mentioned, there's links here at the bottom of page 21. Jevons Paradox is one of the least understood reasons why humanity has been spinning its wheels for the last 5 decades. So here is where hope enters the picture. In order to defeat Jevons Paradox, it is necessary for us to change together as a species. Conservation, curtailment, efficiency, and renewables are fine for individuals who understand why they are taking these actions, namely for their personal benefit. But to benefit humanity at large, we must all curtail and conserve together. In other words, a one-day paradigm shift is required. If all 6.7 billion of us take these actions together, then we will see a dramatic positive effect. This single-day shift is a key element of Plan S. It's called S-Day. It's a day set by the power elites for a massive planetary shift. Everything will change, including the way we think, the way we use energy, our money system, where we get our food, how we travel, our laws and legal system, our educational system, our religious and scientific institutions, and hundreds of other details about everyday life. And we're now at the top of page 22. Next section, entitled, quote, "But Henry, you're nuts! That's impossible!" End quote. Yes, I hear you. I hear all of you. I can hear the cacophony now, right outside my window. It's just deafening. Quote, "Good heavens, our brother Henry must have lost his mind. He has slipped over the edge. He is collaborating with the enemy, the power elites, no less. May God save his soul." Unquote. Before you send that email or call, I want you to listen to me and listen well. Since this is a watershed moment in my life, in all of our lives, in the course of our species development, and in our personal relationship. It is time to forget all our childish preconceived notions about how the world works and understand that we are a very young, uninformed species. We have a lot to learn, and it is time for us to grow up together. I do give thanks for the Internet, Google, Wikipedia, and all of my teachers. We are surrounded by oceans of information. There is no longer any excuse to remain uninformed. Well, maybe you could say there isn't time to absorb it all. I'll grant you that. There is absolutely no known law of nature that prohibits humanity from experiencing a paradigm shift in a single day. Once again, I really want you to hear me on this. There is absolutely no known law of nature that prohibits humanity from experiencing a paradigm shift in a single day. I will get to the market crash here shortly, but you got me on a roll, and this is really important. I told you earlier that we can only think impossible when something is prohibited by the laws of nature. So I really do want to hear from you if you know about a law of nature that I've missed. I've been a futurist and working on sustainability for 40 years and haven't found one yet. I really don't think there is one. If there was, I think I would have noticed it by now, don't you? We can do this, my friends. We really can. I believe in our sustainable future, and I believe that the impossible can become possible. I've spent the last 5 years researching times that humans have done the impossible. I've opened my mind to learn why we can grow up, not why we can't. This is more of that new way of thinking Einstein mentions. It is precisely the kind of thinking that got the Wright brothers into the air on December 17, 1903, at Kitty Hawk. And there's a link there where you can read more about that. We're at the bottom of page 22 right now. They certainly didn't succeed by paying attention to a world that was laughing and scoffing at them, or by listening to famous scientists like Lord Kelvin and his inane pronouncement, heavier-than-air flying machines are impossible. I cannot afford to put your doubts and skepticism into my brain. My cup is half full, not half empty. And we've now arrived at the top of page 23. And we've got a nice black and white photo here from December 17th, 1903, of the very first powered flight at Kitty Hawk in North Carolina. I have hundreds of stories, videos, websites, books, and articles that I can show you to sell you on the idea that a one-day paradigm shift is possible. Likewise, I can show you hundreds of conscious, aware, and awake members of the power elite on our planet who are open and receptive to plans and solutions that move us to sustainability. They are waking up rather quickly right now, this very week. It is 5:26 p.m. on Sunday, the 12th of October, and I need to wrap this, so I will share... I'm sorry, that's the date that I wrote this, not the date I'm reading it to you. The date I'm reading it to you now is actually 2 o'clock in the morning on Monday, the 20th of October. And I need to wrap this, so I will share just a few of these with you. I hope I can get you to change your mind. If you are sick of all the doom and gloom and want a good shot of hope, check out these Ray Anderson clips, and they're coming up. Here is a former plundering corporate CEO who woke up and has experienced a profound transformation and paradigm shift. Actually, I need to talk to this man about Plan S. These clips are from The Corporation, and that's a link here in the middle of page 23 to a online video called The Corporation. Ray is not alone. There are hundreds more like him. While we're on the subject of the Wright brothers, I will let Ray speak about the comparison between learning to fly and learning to live sustainably. This is really the best analogy I've found proving that we can do this. The Wright brothers pushed ahead with their impossible dream because they could find no law that prohibited heavier-than-air flight. The birds in the sky were all the proof they needed. And now I will push forward with Plan S, since I too can find no law prohibiting a sustainable future. I can find no law prohibiting a one-day paradigm shift. This one is 10 minutes, and if you can make the time, watch it all. If not, tune in to this 1.5 minutes at 6 minutes and 33 seconds to 7 minutes and 52 seconds. Just slide the round buckle over to around 6 minutes as shown in the image. And we've now arrived at the top of page 24, and we got a picture of Ray and a YouTube clip here. The title of the clip is Ray Anderson on Sustainability. Here's Ray again. Oh, well, you have to go back to your computer and play that clip. So here I am reading right after that first clip. And actually, there's another clip right underneath it. And I wrote, here's Ray again, also from The Corporation, talking about the way of the plunderer. And Ray says, quote, my goodness, Sunday people like me will end up in jail, unquote. This one's just 3 minutes. You can click on Ray Anderson, The Way of the Plunderer. Now, let's look at a most amazing one-day paradigm shift that occurred in Sweden on September 3, 1967. This day was known as Dagen H, or H Day. Sweden did H Day, Plan S is doing S Day. I like it. On this Sunday, an entire country switched from driving on the left to driving on the right side of the road. Here's another more detailed article on Dagen H, and we have a link there at the bottom of page 24 to this other article, that states, Swedish road users had been living with left-side traffic for 233 years. And now we've arrived at the top of page 25 here. There are many other examples through history of rapid, planned changes that affected huge numbers of people and that created dramatic changes along the lines of the upcoming paradigm shift. Here are just a few of them. And there's six of them listed here, and they all have links at the top of page 25. The Magna Carta, 1215. Peace of Westphalia, 1648. D-Day, Normandy, France, June 6, 1944. The euro currency changeover, which occurred between 1999 and 2002. The victory gardens of both World War I and World War II. And the Marshall Plan, which happened post-World War II. And finally, here is a short list of people you can Google from the world's wealthy and power elite, whom I believe would support Plan S. I need help bringing it to their attention, along with hundreds of other progressive-minded movers and shakers who are just as sick of the status quo as you and I are. Ray Anderson, John Templeton, Oprah Winfrey, Pierre Omidyar, Jeffrey Skoll, George Soros, Ed Begley Jr., Bono, Shakira, Warren Buffett, Michael Moore, Ted Turner, Ed Bass, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Jeff Bezos, John Mackey, Robert Redford, the Hewlett Foundation, Paul G. Allen, Mo Siegel, Yerka Rysavy, Pete Seeger, Daryl Hannah, Joan Baez, Richard Rainwater, Hilary Duff, Ray Kurzweil, Alanis Morissette, Keanu Reeves, Dennis Kucinich, Al Gore, Michael Bloomberg, Michael Franti, Nora Jones, Alicia Keys, Willie Nelson, Paul Hawken, E.O. Wilson, Shai Agassi, Bianca Jagger, Mel Gibson, Woody Harrelson, James Cameron, T. Boone Pickens, Peter G. Peterson, Muhammad Yunus, and Jimmy Wales. The jig is up, folks. My mind belongs to me, and this is what I've chosen to do with it. Your mind belongs to you, and you alone control it. You also have choices. I need people to join me in this important work. I'm inviting you to join me in making Plan S, S-Day, Paradigm Shift, a sustainable future, and a new way of thinking a reality. This is possible. This is the end of Audio File 3.